Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Premium Investment Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Damien Chilmey, Head of Investment Managers and Governance from Premium, one of Australia's leading investment platforms. Today, we're talking about fixed interest, but not as you know it. We're going to head into the world of credit, that is lending to corporates. Whilst a lot of focus within the fixed interest space is around government bonds, rates and duration management, within the credit space, you find a host of other characteristics that complement government bonds and provide alternative return features. We will unpack some of the instruments used within the credit space and some of the main talking points for investors. About our guest today, Samantha is Partner, Portfolio Manager and Head of US Liquid Credit Research in the Ares Credit Group, where she is primarily responsible for managing Ares bank loan credit strategies. Sam serves as a vice president and one of four portfolio managers for the Ares Dynamic Credit Allocation Fund. And about Ares. Ares was founded in 1997 and headquartered in Los Angeles. They have over 900 investment professionals found across 30 offices around the globe. The firm manages over US $400 billion, with more than half invested across the Ares Credit Group, making them a very large and experienced manager in the liquid and illiquid credit strategies. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And you're here from LA. I hope it was a good journey. Has it been a good time here in Australia?
Always a good time. Definitely jet lag is the toughest part.
Yep. Yeah. No. And before we get into the show, just give us a little bit about your background, your early days. How did you get into bond investing and credit markets?
Yeah, you know, I guess it's always better to be lucky than smart. And I started my career actually at Houlihan Lokey in 2000, which is a boutique investment bank, but they specialize in financial restructuring and distressed M&A. So when I graduated college and we had this distress cycle, I was very fortunate to be at this firm because I had great experience in terms of deal flow, working out companies. And it's a great time to start in credit. What can go wrong? So it was a great foundation. Yeah. In terms of my career.
I can imagine. Imagine a lot of your other friends probably had nothing much to do at that time.
Exactly.
But as you point out, you know, working out what goes wrong.
Right.
And you know, seeing that, and I suppose that really helps to sharpen your focus as an investor. But, you know, so for the better part of 15 years since the GFC, you know, the fixed interest was very much forgotten about in many people's portfolios, and equities were taking a lot of the focus. We've got now yields at decade highs and the sector, you know, gaining further attention. And Ares are real specialists in this space. So what are you asking investors to look at for solutions, you know, as non-traditional fixed interest? And what do you mean by that?
You are finally getting income and fixed income.
Yeah.
Like you said. So when we think about the asset classes that we specialize in liquid credit, we're talking leveraged loans, high yield bonds, and CLOs. And when you invest in these asset classes today, you can get current income of between 8 to 10%. And when you think about that versus traditional fixed income, whether that's Barclays Agg, whether that's you know, government treasuries, you think, okay, you're getting between 2 to 4% current income. So if I can get, you know, call it north 8% current income, that really cushions a lot of the volatility that we see, whether it's from spreads, whether it's from rates. The funds that we invest in traditionally are shorter duration, so call it 1 to 1.5 years of duration. So you're just taking that credit risk. You're not trying to call rates, which everyone has been wrong on.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so Ares, very large asset manager by any measure. And when a lot of people would think about equities and they would say that, you know, huge size is considered a bad thing. Why is that different in credit?
Yeah, scale is very important in credit. And there's a couple reasons for that. I would say, you know, starting with sourcing in terms of the new issue market is much more important in credit rather than when you think about IPOs, right? In equities, smaller part of that market. And so having that access and having an early look at the new issue market gives us an edge when we think about both diligence, getting better allocations, and in some cases, we actually get better economics. But when you have this scale, you're also able to have this research platform to get better information, and so your credit selection is better. And so what does that lead to is also lower defaults. And when you find yourself in a default, which again, Aries has significantly lower defaults in the market, you need the scale to maximize your recoveries. So what happens is when a company does default, there's certain committees that you can sit on. And so you want to be in the room. You want to be sitting on that super steering committee, driving the restructuring, getting better outcomes versus other lenders in the capital structure.
Mm. And I imagine within securitized space as well, you're a whole lot of individual loans that you've seen, you know, throughout your whole platform as well. So that's, you know, again, part of that scale bit.
Oh, absolutely. By being part of this platform, our CLO team is every name they're looking through, every loan we cover on the liquid credit side.
Yeah.
So they have access to that. And then we have access to what's happening in the CLO market.
Yeah.
And then on the direct lending side, for the most part, they're getting monthly financials.
Mm.
In liquid credit, you're getting financials every 3 months. So we have an early read on what's happening with the consumer, what's happening with inflation. It gives us, you know, really good intel into what's happening.
Yeah, very interesting. So you talked about CLOs. So that's an interesting one. We'll try and unpack that one there. Because three-letter acronyms post GFC, there's another TLA right there. But, you know, people do get worried when they hear some of those acronyms. You know, tell us why, I suppose, CLOs are different, not the ones that a lot of people would remember through the GFC.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of misconceptions about CLOs or collateralized loan obligations, which are quite different than the CDOs, collateralized debt obligations that we saw during the great financial crisis. First of all, the CLOs that we invest in held up very well during the GFC. And what you saw on the other side of that, the CDOs that really, you know, that blew up, were these were mortgages. They were blind pool of mortgages. Not only were they risky, they were correlated. And in some cases, they actually were the synthetic form of mortgages. So you actually didn't even own the mortgages. So no one even knew what they were buying. With CLOs, it's very different because it's a transparent pool. It's a pool of leveraged loans. And that we can see every single loan that we're buying. And there is leverage and tranched. That's why it's called collateralized loan obligations. But it's very different because it's a diversified pool. It's very transparent. We can stress test every, you know, borrower that's within that pool of assets.
And is this pool, is it been appealing? Is it been a good space to operate in recently?
It's been very attractive because when you think about, you know, triple B CLOs, you can pick up, call it 9%, you know, current income, and the default rate is essentially zero. And I say essentially, you know, just to provide some cushion, but it's the track record's been impressive because there's so much structural subordination that defaults would have to be even higher than we saw during the global financial crisis and more prolonged to even, you know, impair a triple B CLO. So there is a lot of subordination beneath you.
Getting into some of the big themes that are going on at the moment. So what's the Aries assessment of the current economic conditions?
Yeah, it's despite talking about a recession, right, a year ago, the most talked about recession, things feel pretty good. We had a, you know, good earnings season. Fundamentals are very strong. You know, that being said, you know, we do see slowing growth, which is a great environment for credit. But, you know, there has been yellow blinking lights in terms of whether it's the lower income consumer. You know, we do have our eyes on commercial real estate and the impact on regional banks' balance sheets. But overall, things are very strong. What has happened is almost this phenomenon called a rolling recession, where we've already had recessions in certain subsectors. So you've had 3 of the 10 sectors, you know, having stress, call it last couple years, whether that's telecom, manufacturing, housing, and then those sectors improved, and then you kind of have other sectors taking over. Chemicals have had some destocking. Packaging has had some destocking. So it's not everything at once. So it's almost as if we already had some stress. It was just masked by other sectors doing very well. So we're not going to be too complacent. I don't want to say the world is perfect. You know, clearly we have a presidential election, you know, coming up, and there's a lot of geopolitical noise out there. But what our job is to look at the micro, look at the bottoms up, pick the best credits, and trade around that volatility.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine then even within active, that's what you'd call like a stock picker's market as well too, where you get in the different sectors taking leadership. I don't know if you want to use leadership in that sense.
Well, but, certain parts of Asia, right? Yeah. Certain parts aren't doing well, right? Yeah. So you have to really dig in on the winners and the losers. You're exactly right. It's a credit picker's market. Mm. And then in our global multi-asset products, we can actually rotate between asset classes as well. Mm. So we're kind of changing you look at relative value, high yield at the end of fourth quarter was really interesting from both a spread perspective and rates. We had a big rally in December. And so now we've been rotating into more floating rate, getting current income in loans and in CLOs because high yield bonds have spreads have been a little bit tighter.
Yeah. And so we talk about, I suppose, as sectors in distress, then, within a high yield, a specialist credit, people get very fixated on defaults. So what are you seeing in this space?
Yeah, we've seen the headlines. Defaults have doubled, right? They were coming from 0 to 1%, right? Now they're a little bit north of 2. So we all kind of have a laugh about that. But defaults are increasing. That's absolutely true. More toward historical levels of call it, 3 to 4%. What we have seen is the companies that have defaulted in the last, year have really been the worst of the worst, right? It's companies like in the retail space. It's half of those companies have already filed Chapter 11 before or had a distressed exchange. So I think going forward, the market has identified the companies that are likely to default. Now, there are always going to be surprises, of course, but we don't think you're going to see that spike in defaults. And there's a couple of reasons for that. We just had a cycle, if you think about it, in 2020, where we had a high level of defaults. Traditionally, there's more of a time period between cycles, right? Call it 6 to 7 years.
20 to 22, you would think it's a bit tight.
Exactly, for things to kind of the excesses to build up. So when you look at balance sheets, we've actually pushed out maturities. So the next couple of years is a very small percentage of companies that their debt is coming due. And then the other way a company defaults is inability to service their debt. And interest coverage is really strong right now. Now, if we're higher for longer, of course, there's that tail of the loan market in a couple of years. Well, you'll see signs of stress, right? Yeah. That's not our base case. And again, that comes down to picking the best credits, winning by not losing. But when we look today, I mean, things feel pretty good. I do think you're not going to see a spike in defaults, but you will see mark-to-market volatility, right? Yeah. That's really going to be more of the theme.
Mm. And overall leverage, is it up or down across the market?
So leverage has been coming down.
Yeah.
And that's both from, EBITDA growth, of course. Even though we've had inflation, companies have been able to pass along those costs. So we're in a really good spot from a leverage standpoint, especially in high yield. Mm. That has become a much higher quality asset class. So balance sheets are really strong and liquidity is strong because there's been so much capital raised the last few years. A lot of these companies have used that opportunity to shore up their balance sheets.
Sure. Yeah. And we'll talk about, I suppose, balance sheets there and, kind of the new issuance market. And I suppose Ares has a benefit that you can work with borrowers, with corporates, and offer a number of solutions through there as well. So how are, borrowers looking at these current conditions and how are you supporting them through their capital needs?
Yeah, borrowers have definitely come to market more to refinance their debt.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen a lot of new money come in, new supply, we say. And that's because there's been this valuation gap between buyers and sellers. So you look at the equity markets, had quite a nice run. So if you're a buyer, do you really want to pay these prices, heading into perhaps, a presidential election or there's certain reasons why they may not want to pull the trigger, but the seller doesn't want to transact at a lower price. Like, no, you pay me, X price. So there's this gap. So things aren't transacting as much as they had to in the past. Now we expect that should pick up. We've seen a little bit of M&A pickup. We've seen some, we call them dividend deals from sponsors. So a little bit of companies selling some assets. We're seeing a little bit of new issue pick up, but it's been very muted. Now, what's been an interesting theme is there's been this kind of convergence between the liquid markets and the direct lending markets. So what you saw last year were the direct lending markets refinanced like $3 to $4 billion issuers from syndicated loans. And traditionally, the direct lending market's smaller, right? Yeah. It's more middle market. So we've seen these markets converge where an issuer or sponsor can go either direct or they can go syndicated. We've seen kind of a reversal in that large cap company coming more syndicated this year, actually. Now, Ares has an advantage in that sense, where either way that company decides to go, we can provide a solution. We can use our $300 billion balance sheet to finance that business. Either they go syndicated or they go direct. And so not only are we having early access to information, when the company does come, let's say, to syndicated public markets, we can get better allocations, you know, better economics, things like that. So it's really interesting how these markets have converged.
Yeah. No, that's very interesting. I think we might leave it there. Sam, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Praemium Limited is the issuer of the Investment Leaders and Advice Leaders podcasts. These podcasts are for promotional purposes only and aren't tailored to individual financial situations and do not contain financial advice. Views expressed by presenters may not align with Praemium's. For more information about Praemium, including our disclosure documents, please visit our website. We recommend that individuals seek professional financial advice before taking action.